I'll be honest, this wasn't a psalm that excited me terribly at first. I mean, about all it says is the Lord reigns, which is not a huge surprise when it's the Bible speaking. I half thought we could say it and then, you know, Noel could go straight into some song like Praise My Soul, the King of Heaven. I even wondered as I looked at it, you know, who'd chosen this psalm for me to preach on? I kind of pictured Rupert Higgins down in Bristol chuckling darkly over his final farewell gift to the new rector. I mean, it isn't even one of those psalms where after much soul-searching, the psalmist reassures himself and us that in spite of everything he's been through, the Lord does reign. Now, here, we're just told it. This way, that way, the other way, admittedly, but basically, the Lord reigns, and that's it. And then I realised there are times when I just need the statement of a truth that I already know. I was talking to a member of the church family this week, and he'd been struggling with unemployment for many months, and as he was talking to me, he said to me, look, don't misunderstand me, Hugh. He said, I believe in God. Jesus is my saviour. I trust him for that, but there are just some mornings when I get out of bed and I think to myself, I thought, yes, of course. There are just some mornings when as you get out of bed, you want the psalmist to reassure you, the Lord reigns. So I started back again in Psalm 93. And it began to reveal secrets and some of the secrets of God's kingdom. Look with me at it. See the first one, the kingdom's scope. Its range, its scope, it's there in verses 1 and 2. The Lord reigns. He's speaking of a king, and in describing him, the psalmist uses repetition to make his point, as he's going to do throughout the psalm. The Lord reigns, he's robed in majesty. Royal character is his royal clothing. The Lord is robed in majesty. This is a royal king, and is armed with strength. He is not just a constitutional monarch. This king has power. This king intends to act like a king. He's dressed in sumptuous velvet robes and a suit of armour all at once. And then the psalmist makes one of those gear changes which, once you've seen it, takes your breath away. I don't know whether you spotted it. He moves from the Lord, that's Yahweh, the God of Israel, a history bound up with that people, and I'm reaching for my atlas, I'm wanting to check for the appropriate place to be sensitive to this God, to his demands, to the shape he puts on the culture. I'm wanting to be sensitive to the rights of a minority faith in a multicultural society, and the psalmist moves from the Lord to the world. He says, you don't need your atlas. This God is for everywhere. When I say the Lord reigns, I mean his kingdom's scope is the cosmos, no limits. And this is what he says about the world. The world is firmly established. It cannot be moved. Now, I know this is a time when we've all kinds of fears about our planet and more about them in a moment, but it is still true there is an immense security about it as well. We expect it to be here in the morning, don't we? We've made laws of physics and science based on that security. We act on them, we live by them, we travel by them as if they're reliable. And that kind of security is all down to this God. His making and sustaining powers that positioned and keep our world just where it's needed for the life we enjoy. Matter of fact, it's not just a present security either. This is a world with a sure future. I mean, just turn over a page to Psalm 98. And listen in as the psalmist, in one of the psalms that follow on from this one, looks to the future. Verse 7. Let the sea resound and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. Let the rivers clap their hands. Let the mountains sing together for joy. Let them sing before the Lord, for he comes to judge the earth, and he'll judge the world in righteousness and the peoples with equity. On that day, why is the creation so happy? Because on that day, God will secure his creation as well as his people. It really will be put right and immovable then. But come back to tonight's psalm. And notice as the psalmist moves swiftly on that what was true about space is also true about time for the scope of this kingdom. It's limitless. Your throne, verse 2, was established long ago. You are from all eternity. I mean, let it sink in. This is not the new God on the block. There hasn't been a recent coup in the pantheon of gods, and here's the psalmist saying, let me introduce your new God to you. People sometimes play the longevity card, don't they, in religion? Oh yes, they said, that's all very well, but before Christianity, eh? What then? The psalmist says, there was no before. And if you're still listening, when he comes to the end, he's going to tell us, there will be no after either, because this Lord reigns for endless days, verse 5. Now here's a God who is not looking over his shoulder, wondering who's coming up next to overthrow him. Which ideology will supersede him? This Lord reigns. Everywhere you look, the world is his oyster. Any time you choose, from one eternity to another, the scope of the kingdom, everywhere, any time. But, some of you, do you remember those school days when you've got something, your hand is up, you're almost going red with the effort of keeping it up there, you're bursting to say something because you've spotted the flaw in teacher's argument, if only he'll let you get a word in, and finally he says, yes, what is it, and you burst out. The world's not like that, is it? I mean, it really doesn't seem that safe or at all immovable. And teacher pauses and looks and raises an eyebrow and sighs wearily at our impatience and carries on and, yeah, we should have waited. He's getting there. And the psalmist moves from the kingdom's scope, everywhere, anytime, to the kingdom's rule. What kind of reign to expect from this Lord? And that's there in verses 3 and 4. Yeah, and as soon as you look at them, you see it, don't you? This world he's describing is not some manicured English lawn, you know, regimented straight lines, not a blade of grass out of place, not a finger raised in protest. No, the rule is not like that. But before I can mutter words like tsunami or Hurricane Katrina, the psalmist is saying, the seas have lifted up, O Lord. The seas have lifted up their voice. The seas have lifted up their pounding waves. The psalmist has seen the pictures that have filled our television screens this last fortnight. He's describing them. They don't mean there's no king or no kingdom. For the moment, that kind of turbulence and upheaval is part of what the kingdom looks like. Tsunamis rise. Katrina's blow, they wreak their terrible destruction, but the Lord still reigns. The seas do go back. And the repetition that builds up the rebels is used again to affirm the ruler, isn't it? The seas have lifted up, O Lord, the seas have lifted up their voice, the seas have lifted up their pounding waves, mightier than the thunder of the great waters. Mightier than the breakers of the sea, the Lord on high is mighty. Yeah, the Lord still reigns. Now, of course, we're asking the why question. Why does it happen? Why is it allowed? Why doesn't the ruler stop it? And they're good questions. They're important questions. The psalmist asks them himself elsewhere. But for tonight, he just wants us to know what the kingdom's like. A world where forces attempt to sabotage it. Yes, that fits. But a world where the king still reigns. That's the kingdom rule. And there's value even in stating it like this. See, when you do get the chance to pursue the question, even if we come to the point, and many of us haven't got beyond it, where the comprehensive answer to the why question still eludes us, we can only put up our hands and say, I don't know. We're not saying, I don't know and the answer could be anything. No, we're saying, I don't know all the detailed answers, but it still lies in this square. where the Lord reigns. Remember doing jigsaws? Golden rule of jigsaws, according to my mum, is start with the corners. You can identify them. Then you get the straight lines, don't you? And when you've got the edges all done, you still have 978 pieces. You don't know where they go, but you do know they fit in that square. It's something like that here, isn't it? You've got your 978 why questions, and I can't answer them all, but I know they fit in this square where the Lord reigns. Hundreds of years later. Hardened fishermen are caught in a fierce squall. The sleepy passenger they've just woken staggers to the front of the boat as the wind is howling and the waves are breaking over it. And as if he was talking to, you know, an excited puppy that can't stop jumping up and down on any visitor that comes, he just says, "Down." And immediately, not just the wind, but the waves are still. And the fishermen are looking at him and looking at each other and they're saying, "What kind of man is this? That even the wind and the waves obey him. Mighty. Mightier. The Lord on high is mighty. And in our boat, Jesus, this Lord," the penny is beginning to drop. And what's true for the forces of nature, please understand, is also true for spiritual and moral forces. The seas are often used in Jewish thought to represent forces of wickedness or even of other gods. "The wicked are like the tossing sea," Isaiah writes, "which cannot rest, whose waves cast up mire and mud." Or turn back a couple of pages to Psalm 89. Look down, it's a church Bible, it's the very bottom of the page, it's verse 9 of Psalm 89. And here's what the psalmist says of God: "You rule over the surging sea. When its waves mount up, you still them. You crushed Rahab like one of the slain. With your strong arm, you scattered your enemies." Now understand, Rahab is the name given both to the original chaos monster, but also to Egypt, and all the powers of her gods tamed at the Exodus. Rahab stands for forces hostile to God's kingdom. Well, our psalm, Psalm 93, is a healthy reminder that these forces will lift up their voice. And they'll flex their muscles. They'll lift up their pounding waves. They'll flex their muscles painfully against God's people and God's purposes. But there's no need to doubt. When other ideologies fill the airwaves, or we see other religions like Islam on the march, as if that means the kingdom's crumbling. No need to doubt the kingdom, because I read of tough times for God's people. I mean, here's one of the church papers. It does some snippets from around the world. I mean, let me just read you the headlines. They really speak for themselves. China, wave of arrests. Belarus, refusal. Indonesia, attacked. Kazakhstan, leave now. Nagorno-Karabakh, sentenced. Pakistan, Talibanization. Bangladesh, 2 murdered. Saudi tortured, Vietnam destroyed. Yes, waves do crash down on the church, or subversively take our feet from under us and suck us away in their current. I was at a meeting last week, there were about 80 Christian leaders from around London. It was all to do with the implications of this new incitement to religious hatred bill that's going before the Lords again next month. And from what everyone there was saying, the danger of the bill is that it is so loosely worded that it will not only achieve that objective, but according to lawyers, a baroness, a bishop, a police inspector there, it could make preaching the gospel illegal. The day before it reaches the Lord's, Lord Joff's bill will surface there, a bill which he describes as not euthanasia by the back door, but by the front door. And yet I read Psalm 93 and it's encouraging me not to be overwhelmed, even when the voices lift up seem so powerful, even when they come from within religious denominations. It's all a world the psalmist knows. And he reminds us, mightier, mightier than the thunder of the great waters, than the breakers of the sea, the Lord on high is mighty. The kingdom's scope, everywhere, anytime. The kingdom's rule, what does it look like? It's in spite of, not without opposition. So notice lastly what I've called the kingdom's ethics. The move from verse 4 to verse 5 is not quite the grating of gears you might at first imagine. I mean, come in your mind's eye to the seashore. No, not some sandy beach, but some craggy, boulder-strewn coastline, you know, great for rock scrambling. And the sea crashes in and everything's covered in water and spray and foam. And when it clears, and when the undercurrent sucks the waters back out again, there are the boulders, just as before. I think it's like that in the psalmist's mind, isn't it? If the Lord reigns, if no rebellion, however forcefully the waves pound, can break him, then when the spray clears, we'll see. Verse 5. Your statutes stand firm. Literally, your words stand firm. God's laws still apply. God's promises still hold. Holiness adorns your house. See, here's another explanation of God's kingdom ethics from ones we normally think of. It's an explanation as to why they should be followed. Not because of fear of hell, that he'll judge us if we don't. True though that might be. Not hope of heaven. No, this is because they fit. They come from the God who put the world together, who knows how it was meant to work, how we were designed to live in harmony with our God, with one another, with his creation. That's why I have to take it seriously when he says, holiness adorns your house for endless days, O Lord. Whether the house is the temple of the psalmist's mind, the individual Christian, the church family, as in the gospel age, or the whole new creation of future eternity. As one writer put it, holiness is always in fashion. It is a great relief to a fashion-conscious animal like myself. I only know if something's fashionable if my children tell me. Occasionally I flick through some magazine, found one at home the other day. I looked through, there was a fashion page, and I discovered that the little black dress is back in fashion. I confess I never knew it had been out of fashion, but there you are, in case you didn't know, it is back in fashion. I think I'll still give them a miss. But I don't need my children's hints or any magazine's tips to be permanently trendy with God. Holiness is always in fashion with him. And these are the ethics that fit and are forever. Everywhere, anytime, whatever people say or do. Do you remember when the New Testament tells me that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today and forever? It's doing so in Hebrews chapter 13 in the context of all kinds of ethics. Of loving one another, especially the prisoner and those who are suffering. Of keeping marriage pure, of being content and not greedy, of not falling for false teaching and ideology. And it says in the middle of it, the Lord reigns. It's just a statement. But I need it when I face up to life, whatever scale we live it on. The day when you wake up and it feels like life sucks, as they say. You know, your Hurricane Katrina has struck, your everything's been swept away. The Lord reigns. Your statutes stand firm. Even that morning, in the New Orleans Superdome or its equivalent, godliness still applies. He's looking for it. Or you wake up and you're unemployed again today. The Lord reigns. What is the godly way to live today unemployed? That is still the vital question. Or just, you ever have them, those days you wake up and you are just weary of battle. I've had enough. The Christian life's just got too tough, too lonely. I'm tired of swimming against the tide, you know, whether it's work, home, socializing. I'm always having to stand out like the sore thumb. I'm tired of facing constant bills from Parliament, motions from Synod. It's all too much. I'm tired of being like King Canute trying to hold back the waves. Well, remember, Canute spoke to the sea. The psalmist looks up to God and says, mightier, mightier The Lord on high is mighty. Kingdom scope? Everywhere, anytime. Kingdom rule? In spite of, not without opposition. That's what it looks like. Kingdom ethics? They fit. And they're forever. And you know, when the psalmist uses these three words, he means all of that. The Lord reigns. Encouraging? I hope so. Humbling? Yeah. For many of us, I expect it's that as well. So why don't we, before we go any further, leave our Bibles open, have that psalm open in front of you, look at it in your lap, and in some moments of silence, let's put ourselves alongside it. Examine ourselves. Let's take the silence to whisper our thank yous to God as we see the encouragements. And take the silence to start whispering our sorries as we're humbled.